Hello, dear listeners. It's Pleasance. I created with my darling Rita Stevens, who is our community leader in Thrive and in Lola, we created the seasonal soulful self-care guide for you. So what it is essentially some questions and some key areas for you to think about and consider and write down and map out for your own life each season. So go ahead and jump on the website, littleom.com, littleom.com, and pick up your copy of your seasonal soulful self-care guide and enjoy. I can't wait to hear what practices and what rhythms and routines you set in your own life this season. Okay, hello and welcome to the Soulful Self-Care Sessions. It's Pleasance, and today I'm here with my friend Marcy. Marcy, say hello.
Hello, nice to see you all virtually.
Yeah, nice to connect with you. Well, us to have a conversation that you'll listen to. So.
That's right.
So Marcy and I met years ago because I don't even remember, I'm sorry, but at the time I was having a lot of events at the studio, so I don't remember everything that we hosted. But we met each other because Little Om hosted your meditation teacher.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
Who was your teacher at the time?
My teacher at the time was Felix Lopez.
Great. And mm-hmm. So that's how we originally met. And Little Om hosted an event
Yes. At
some point years ago. Now it feels like lifetimes ago. And since then, both of us have changed so much of our lives in so many ways. And one of the reasons I like to have this platform to have the conversations is to have real, authentic connections with mostly women, although we have had my husband on. Mostly women who talk about the real life ebbs and flows and changes and shifts that occur, because I think there's so much in society that says, like, here's the one path and you'll have one career and you'll stay on it and you'll be happy and blah, blah, the BS that we know is, in my experience, I'll speak for myself, is not true.
Yes, absolutely not true. Yes.
And in the spiritual path and in the spiritual context, which is where I think both of us really, our lens is really from, that's almost like to stay in the same would almost be a sign of like a practice that's not evolving or expanding mm-hmm. or shifting or changing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So tell us a little, whatever you're comfortable with sharing about your life since you hosted Felix at Little Om, and tell us more about you and what you're doing.
Yeah, it's does feel like lifetimes ago, because I feel like I've worked through lifetimes of stuff since then.
Yeah.
And my own spiritual journey has just been winding. I mean, what you said resonates with me so strongly, and it's something I had to reckon with in myself, that I had to allow myself to get to a place to allow myself to really my personal self to keep evolving and my spiritual self to keep evolving, right? And that took a lot, because my conditioning, I think our conditioning, I was writing about this week, like our conditioning has us thinking that then at some point we arrive, whether it's a career or spiritually we arrive to a place, or we find the capital T truth, and then it's like, ta-da, it's like this wrapped up in a bow mm-hmm. dynamic. And in many ways, I can't remember what year I met you, but around maybe a couple of years before that time, I felt like I had the bow wrapped up scenario. I was living what is in many ways the quote unquote American dream. I I owned a house, I owned a car, I was married, I was going to the best grad school for my my background in conflict analysis and resolution. I had a tenured government job that got that had me working on things that I was really interested and passionate about. And I had a very deep spiritual path at the time. I was practicing Muslim, and I really, it seemed like things were aligned. And then I discovered that they weren't, because I had this recognition where I just really realized that I was not fulfilled. And as I was feeling not fulfilled, then I recognized that in that process of not feeling fulfilled, that I had actually taken on other people's dreams. And that's really the last, you know, how many ever years it's been, is there's been this process of peeling back the layers of social conditioning, family conditioning, cultural conditioning, gender conditioning, early childhood experiences and wounds that haven't been healed, reckoning experiences that I was having. At the time, I was in a marriage that was extremely misaligned, and unfortunately, that partner had suffered, was suffering a lot from depression. I realize now, and also was just in a really dark place, and I hadn't really given myself space to acknowledge that. And that's really because I hadn't at that time fully, I would say, delved into the darkness of myself. Mm-hmm. And that's really where my path has led me, is like moving towards, you know, I came to, now I work a lot with people on intuition development, reconnecting them to their inner voice. I work primarily with women, self-identified women, who are seeking to reconnect to that inner voice, because really that's kind of what I had to do. It's like, you know, walking through the shadow of death of myself is basically what I had to do.
Okay, I want to back up a little bit into some really tangible specifics. So first of all, is your background Muslim, or how did you find your way there?
No, actually, I lived, so 9/11, short version is 9/11 happened. When 9/11 happened, I got extremely curious about what was happening. And I had this very strong sense that what I was being shown on the TV was not the whole story. And through a series of what I understand now is intuitive synchronicity moments, I was sitting in the library at the time at university studying. I never, ever, ever picked up the school newspaper. Some reason I had this very strong inkling to do so. And there was one sitting like at the table next to me that someone had left behind. And when I opened it, literally the first page I opened it to said study abroad in Egypt. And I didn't know why, but I knew I needed to figure out more. There was a meeting starting literally in 5 minutes. I packed everything up. I didn't care what my plans were the rest of the day. And I went to the meeting. 5 minutes into the meeting, I had this overwhelming sense that I had to move to Egypt. And that's what I did. I picked up and I moved to Cairo. And in that process, I had the opportunity to backpack around during different breaks and times most of the region. And in that process, I experienced a world that was infused with spirit, which I didn't realize that's what I was looking for, but that is what I was looking for. Mm. And that's usually, that's my experience of how intuition works. If the ego thinks we're going for one reason, right? The ego thinks we're doing something.
Yeah.
And then our soul is like, okay, you can think that, but I have a different plan. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me. And I didn't have language for spiritual awakening. It was many years later that I recognized that what happened for me was that going to Egypt was the start of my spiritual awakening. And that was not my plan at the time. And when I came back, I was very fervorously like curious about spirit. And at the time, I didn't know anything about Eastern religions, yoga, meditation, any of those pieces that now kind of fulfill a huge part of the multifaceted fabric of my own spiritual path. And so I decided to just start diving into the monotheistic faiths, and I started reading like crazy. I was like a book eater, as one of my first teachers called me. And I just read and read and read. And I picked up at some point I picked up a Quran, and instantly, when I read the women on the chapter on women, I felt the way I experienced that in my own experience of that was that it was a feminist manifesto. And I was understanding that from the context of how it was written in that time. It was extremely radical. Very forward leaning for that historical time. And so for me, that really sparked something in me and started my path in that process. And eventually I converted. And I really thought I had one part of my path right. I knew I had this very strong instinct that I was meant to be a spiritual teacher and teach people. But I thought that what that looked like, the container of what that looked like, was as a traditional Muslim scholar. So that's the path that I followed for many years. Until I was at this pivotal point where a Muslim teacher actually said, listen, if you really want to master your mind, you need to find a Buddhist meditation teacher. They are the masters of the mind. And so that's eventually how I found my first meditation teacher. And then from there, things just like, once I took that first pull, big pull, I would say, like the next chapter that intuition was inviting me into, it just spiraled into such a rich, diverse process of studying Buddhism and yoga and Hindu tradition, that, you know, kind of underpins the tradition of yoga. I studied, you know, shamanism, a lot of earth-based spirituality. Divine feminine is a huge aspect of my spiritual path now. Witchcraft, I mean, like, you name it, I went into it. But I was quite resistant at first because I had this moment where I recognized that I, of course, needed to really let go of who I thought I was and embrace who I was and who I am and allow myself to continue to become who I am, which was just much more multifaceted, complex, and far less orthodox than I was thinking.
Okay, so how do you identify right now?
I identify as nothing.
Yeah, nothing. Really. You're not living as Muslim or Buddhist, or it's kind of a integration or intersection of everything that you've learned and studied. And what was your family of origin, religious and spirituality? Like, what was happening there, and how did they accept the move to Egypt and the conversion?
They didn't. It was a horrible experience. It was really difficult. But I guess, I mean, I feel like that process really prepared me for where I am now, because I had no idea, you know. Before I kind of talk about that, something to kind of place mark in here so that you and your listeners kind of understand where I'm coming from. When I started my path, like into college, you know, I don't know, almost 20 years ago now or whatever it's been, I at the time thought that I wanted to be an FBI agent. I wanted to work in, I was very, very fascinated in criminal behavior and criminal psychology and how things go wrong and how do you prevent that. So that's what I was really interested in. What's interesting to me is that inclination of fascination and pull towards the inner workings of the mind is part of my path, but it's far less kind of masculine and rational and concrete, I guess, in a way, because now my path is very much in this space of working with bridging the human, you know, realm and the unseen, and how you work with unseen forces in a sense to guide you, how you really trust your intuition and integrate that, and how you work in a way that's perhaps less linear and less rational than we are thinking. So that's kind of where I came to in this process of me converting and, you know, really in a sense, spiritually coming out to my family was extremely painful, but I think it really prepared me for where I am now, to keep owning more and more and more of my voice, despite the fact that there's fear around, you know, there can be fear around pieces of intuition and metaphysical dynamics, because our society is extremely rational. And when I was growing up, my family was Christian, but my parents were not really that, I would say they were, my understanding of them now that I have more language for it is that they were more spiritual than religious. Mm-hmm. And so we would go to my grandparents' church for holidays and things like that. But I never felt really connected to that space. I often actually felt very judged. I have several early memories of a child coming into that space and, going off, getting kind of walking out of the church space to the youth space where you kind of had, Sunday meetings and parents were all listening to like the adult sermon stuff. And in those experiences, I have so many memories of feeling shame and judgment because I didn't know where the book of Matthew was in the Bible. Mm. I had experiences, I was always a questioner when I was a child. I was always asking really big questions like, what about people in other parts of the world who haven't been exposed to these teachings? You're telling me that they're going to hell? Mm-hmm. It didn't make sense to me. So while I really connected to a lot of, I would say, like loving teachings of Jesus, I never really fully connected to that. But mm-hmm. I didn't have any other faith to kind of cloak myself in, mm-hmm. or to connect mm-hmm. to, or to use as a foundation. So for many years, I kind of reconnected to that in my own way mm-hmm. when I was in high school and I asked my parents to go what I call church shopping. Mm-hmm. And in that point, we decided to kind of reconnect to a new space that was not the family's church over all those periods of time.
Where did you grow up? Where are you from?
Michigan.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm curious about next is I kind of want to go to this area of where you are now with learning about intuition and guidance from the inside out,
mm-hmm.
and what that relationship looks like with external teachers. Mm-hmm. So one of these things, Danielle Laporte.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I love her.
So a few years ago, she came out, I think it was 2 years ago, with The White Hot Truth. I think that was the latest book before the big race scandals that sort of happened last year with her.
Yes.
So I just want to point all of that out, is that there's a lot of complexities right now in teachers and spirituality and race and intersections and really, really important conversation. So I always want to make sure that we're sort of talking about what's happening that's relevant.
Yep.
Prior to all of that, Danielle drama, what I got out of White Hot Truth is that let go of it all, let go of the teachers, let go of the crystals, let go of the practices, right? That you have all you need, which I deeply, deeply, deeply believe. And it took reading 5 million books, the podcast, being around Zen Buddhist teachers, Insight teachers, Shambhala teachers, like being in rooms and experiences, for me to come to such a deep sense of inner strength and empowerment, where now I have so much less attachment to external teachers.
Yes.
However, I don't think I could be here without that guidance, because mm-hmm. there were some things I needed to learn. There was some ways of seeing the world and some truths, universal truths and mindset practice. There was just so much I needed to learn that I see it as part of the experience. So I would love to hear your experience with teachers, external and internal, and what you think of all that.
Yeah, I love that you brought this up, because I think it's a really important topic. And I have at different times along the way belonged to or been a part of or been the edges of communities that have gurus,
mm-hmm.
Or teachers that position themselves in that way. And I just can't imagine where I am today without that process.
Yeah.
It was difficult. It was in many ways like these illusions that I needed to bounce up against in order for yeah. them to break down inside of me. And I think that teachers can serve as these amazing mirrors. I had to have some really painful experiences yeah. of teachers breaking boundaries. Mm-hmm. I had to have painful experiences of teachers abusing their power with me. Mm-hmm. I had to be in painful experiences of witnessing mm-hmm. teachers abusing their powers with others. I had to witness teachers being extremely misogynistic. I had to witness the human side over and over again in multiple traditions of teachers in order to let them go and finally recognize, well, they're just like me. Yeah. That was a point where after having these painful experiences over and over again, and I would say this, I mean, this is just my journey. My journey at the beginning was I had mainly male teachers. Is just like a whole panel of like lots of male teachers mm-hmm. in different traditions. That was for a long time. At some point, the switch turned, and my teachers became women. When that dynamic happened for me, I have to honestly say that's when I started really coming into myself. Mm. I know that I'm making this like a very gendered conversation, but that's just my experience.
Yeah.
Right. My experience was that all these male teachers at the beginning. Really, and not to say that female teachers or self-identified women, you know, don't abuse their power. That exists too. I just feel blessed that I think what I needed to come into, which was to integrate this very divine feminine lens on my own spiritual path, my own understanding of myself, where the feminine has such a very unique and powerful place in the world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I needed that because of all of these male teachers that I was studying with honestly had a very patriarchal lens. They had this lens where it's like, you know, disconnection from emotions, mm-hmm. a disconnection from feelings, a sense of you're always steady all the time. There will be a point where you don't have all these waves of emotions. And I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for that and thinking, well, how many silent meditation retreats do I have to go on until this happens? How many more hours and days do I have to wake up and keep meditating until this happens, where there's suddenly a situation that you're describing that you're experiencing? And now, personally, I believe it's all a lie.
And which part is a lie?
I believe the idea that you won't experience emotions and that you won't have these waves is a lie. I think right. And I think, you know, my perception is like with also lots of love and compassion and respect. I love all my male teachers. They're great. They taught me a ton. And I will always bow to that. At the same time, their experience is very different because of who they are and the container of how they incarnated in this life than me. And my experiences after working with a lot of female clients, self-identified women clients, that a lot of men are very disconnected from their bodies, mm-hmm. very disconnected from their bodies. So of course mm-hmm. it's understandable why they were transmitting the teachings in the way that they were. I understand mm-hmm. from that point of view. So I had to come to that point first where I recognize, well, wait, this channel is not connecting to my direct experience. Like that's something that I've always taken from the Buddha. The Buddha said, you know, don't listen to me. Look at my direct experience. Look at your own direct experience.
Go have an experience.
Yeah. So for me in that experience of recognizing that their experience is like, wait a minute, their experiences aren't matching mine. It's not because I'm doing something wrong. It's because my experience is different. And around that time, I started having self-identified women teachers. And in that process, mm-hmm. I started finding people who could speak to my experience. And instead of trying, the power dynamic was different for me. It felt like instead of trying to be the ones that were dictating experience, it was more, I felt like my teachers shifted into a place where they were peers with me. Mm-hmm. And in that process, I slowly started.
Shared leadership. Co-creation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Co-creation. Yeah. Exactly. And I feel very grateful to have had some and to still have some great mentors who really both know that they have something to share and to give and be a vessel for, and that they also receive from that process. They also receive back. And so that like gender dynamic is really what slowly started bringing me back into myself and trusting myself. And I still, I mean, like you can see, I have crystals literally on my desk right now. I love them. I have oils next to me.
I was going to say, here's my sage.
Yeah, I have sage too.
Yeah, right.
So I still use all those things. And I totally understand where Danielle is coming from. I mean, the essence of it is true. Like we all have to come back to ourselves, but I agree with you. I can't imagine coming to that conclusion without the suffering and the back and forth and the struggle to trust myself. And, you know, I think those oppositional experiences are what expand us to grow. It's really like when we walk through that darkness, we expand our light.
And we're able to work with, again, the experience of preferences. And, you know, how do we know what's for us or what resonates unless we have an experience of what's not for us or being in those rooms? So fascinating. Yes. I think I have shared this a little. I'm very open about it. I talk about it a lot. Is that my experience is that the reason I know in my body and in my life that the feminine and masculine, I'm really always talking about it from an energetics perspective, like point of view, not a gender point of view, is because I learned divine feminine, sacred divine feminine yoga practice from a male teacher. Mm. And I learned what toxic, abusive masculinity is from a female Buddhist Zen teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I have this deep sense of breaking the boundaries in my own teachers about what I so clearly saw, felt, learned, and the person I was around the masculine energy teacher and around the feminine energy teacher. And I'm so grateful that my life had this beautiful man teaching me about questioning and flows and his long hair and just being in your body and his softness and his curves. Like you just want to like fold into him. And he taught me so much about questioning and evolving and going with the flow. Mm-hmm. And my experience with the very masculine teacher, like, she was very thin. There was like a certain, like, overweight was not necessarily good. Like, there was a lot of boxes to check.
Yes. And
you better believe that I was trying to people please her. Like, I just wanted to do what she said. I just wanted to do the right thing. Like, I was going to be the best student who wore all black and stared at that wall and, like, did it for her, you know? Yep. And I was just waiting for that praise, that external praise, because I wasn't being taught. And the community, the Sangha, it wasn't about what's happening from the inside out. It was all about outside in. So yeah. I'm just so grateful to, like, have had and seen and lived those experiences, because it's just, they're coming. These teachers are coming. The experiences, if you're looking for it, it's never, I'm always like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And we always get exactly what we needed.
Oh, God.
You know, and I think I needed that big kind of dichotomy.
Yeah.
Because the feminine inside of me, and also honestly owning the fact that I am a woman, was broken in me for so long. So long. Yeah. I needed to have that very stark dichotomy in order to fully step into it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, after a very long history of abusive relationships with men in my romantic life, and also some traumatic experiences in my childhood, I just desperately needed to have these teachers that were self-identified women and were embodying this divine feminine way. Yeah. And I think if it had come any other way, it wouldn't have worked for me. And that's the beauty of intuition, right? Is that it just, the universe is so loving and so kind that if we're open to it, we can start to see this very intricate, perfectly weaved web where the experiences we have are consistently inviting us into ourselves.
I think I want to go into the areas that I don't have a lot of people I can talk at this level with. So I'm like excited about going there.
Good.
But I want to, before we do that and talk about some past lives and some psychic abilities in the beyond realms and beyond, I want to clarify something. And I think you commented on this. I posted on Facebook a few months ago about what does woo-woo mean to you?
Mm.
And got a huge thread. I love all my like super sarcastic high school guy friends who were like, woo-woo, like
trains. I saw that, I remember.
And Wu-Tang, and we got all kinds of things up. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love my Facebook friends and community. Like, I love the diversity. Like, it's my happy place. Although I'm taking a social media break, so I'm off for a month, and I'm like, oh, it's good to take a break and like be in your life. But I am one of those people who really loves, like, I don't know, love connecting. So it makes me laugh. However, what I learned on the thread was that woo-woo is extremely derogatory and another way that we have put down sacred feminine, our metaphysical realm, wisdom traditions, indigenous people. So yeah. I am no longer ever using that word. I'm educating now that I know, because I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't attuned to it. I wasn't asking those questions. So I have now changed it in my mind and language to the wow, wow. So I want to know about your wow, wow, how you see the world. Like, what is your experience? I know that you have been talking more about some psychic abilities, your spiritual connection and intuition. I don't know that this is true about past lives for you, but these are topics I study. I have many lives, many masters in my kitchen. I'm always, it's like a go-to handbook for me.
Yeah.
And my son, I speak very openly about my son's experience with his past lives, which I felt when he was in my body and then when he came out and he started telling stories about his past lives. And so I am of this and beyond mindset and always looking to talk to other super intelligent women about this. So share with us your wow wow and your connection to your wow wow.
I love that term, wow, wow. And I think that should totally become just a thing that moves across conversations because, yeah, it is extremely derogatory. And I think at different times I've used that word just to try to bridge so people are like, oh, okay, I know what you're talking about now, right? And but that does perpetrate this process of putting it down when you're not meaning to. And so my wow wow journey is an interesting one. It's been a process where I recognized that I had a lot of wow wow experiences when I was a kid. I was very open. I still don't have concrete memories of when. I know that at some point probably someone said something to me and I got shamed or scared, yeah. And I shut down.
Yeah.
I don't have the memory of when that happened. I work a lot with clients who at different times in their journeys, they may recover that memory. Mm-hmm. Many of us have those memories somewhere hidden inside of us. Mm-hmm. And so when I was a kid, you know, I was very connected with animals and able to kind of somehow communicate with them without words. There was just this very deep understanding that I've always had with nature. Mm-hmm. And I also saw spirits when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And at some point that just turned off. When I was a teenager, I knew my great-grandmother was going to pass before she passed. And I was very frantic that my family was kind of not listening to me, that we needed to go visit her like ASAP. Like, no, we need to pack everything. Go now. Because I knew how important she was to my mom. And their sense was, oh, you know, we have stuff to do, so we can't go until this weekend. And then when we received the phone call the very next day that she had passed, I felt a lot of confusion from that experience. You know, I both felt scared and terrified that I had actually in fact known something that came to be true. And then I also felt kind of scared about, well, what's my family going to think about that? And so my early experiences, at some point they kind of got turned off, and that's also because of social conditioning. Social conditioning teaches us that the rational brain is more important. So, and I became a high achiever. I fell into that line and became a high achiever and pursued academics all the way up to the PhD level. Like, I just was relentless in that realm. And so I really, over time, coming back to the wow in myself was through my own healing journey. I was talking about this earlier with people this week, that actually me opening up to intuition was through my process of going to the depths, the darkest places of myself, going to the wounds that were not healed, going to the places of acknowledging that I was experiencing domestic abuse when I didn't want to acknowledge that. Going to those places, all the places I feared. My fear has been my spiritual practice, to be honest. If I were to kind of like name one thing that threads throughout all of it, it's always fear. Wherever my fear is, that's where I've learned the most. And so instead of walking away from them, at some point I made a pact that I would just keep walking straight into them. And through that process of walking straight into them, through the process of meditating every single day and basically showing up for myself, mm-hmm. I started opening back up again. But I didn't know that I was opening back up again. And this is the thing is, like, my personal experience is, until you have like a language, you have examples, you have a sense of what it looks like to experience wow, it's so easy to miss. Mm-hmm. It can be very subtle, or you can, you know, talk it away. And so I had the opportunity to go to a workshop with a yoga instructor who was connected to my lineage. She was coming through town, mm-hmm. and she talked about the clairvoyance, clairaudience. Yeah. She talked about these different experiences. And I went there thinking like, okay, well, I don't have any connection to this conversation. I'm going to be embarrassed because everyone else around me are more supreme like yogis. They're more connected. So I'm just going to kind of sit in the back. I literally was like, let me sit as far away as possible. Yeah. And the first conversation she had us go through was this exercise of raise your hand if you've experienced this, raise your hand if you've experienced this, raise your hand if you've experienced this. I raised my hand for everything. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, Pleasance, the rest of the workshop, it's a blur. I don't have any idea what she taught. I was just stunned. And afterwards I went up to her and I said, I don't understand.
Yeah.
And her explanation was, you know, no, well, you're very psychic. And that for me changed my experience, especially with my meditation practice. People who have a meditation practice where they have an active imagination are often psychic. They're very connected. They're very intuitive. But we're taught to turn those messages off.
Yeah. Well, and there's so much in Zen Buddhism, if you've come from that lineage, that tells you to turn it off. I mean,
that's right.
Again, let's be clear about what we have done with these gifts over time.
Yeah.
We have shamed, we have burned, we have killed. Like, I get the chills. I'm already tearing up because this is such a part of my lineage's story. It's so painful to wake up to the ways in which we've turned this off for people.
Yes.
And then they feel so, I feel like literally, Mars, like every woman in my life who has anxiety or addiction is just such a powerful like source of spirit and has just been shamed and blamed in our society and yes. told she's not good enough. And that fear has not turned outward into her connection to the Clairs, but has gone inward and caused so much pain.
Yes.
Because these women in my life who have addiction or anxiety are such beautiful gifts from God and the universe and source and spirit and nature and whatever you want to call it. And I see that in them because I can see that energy so clearly in other people. Mm-hmm. And it hurts my heart that they can't see it in themselves, right?
Yes.
That's because of the social conditioning, not...
Because what my experience was similarly, like it's not described. And so if you don't have a context for your experience and you're told, you know, like what I was told over the years, Marcy, you're too emotional. Like that happened to me at work all the time. Too emotional. You're too sensitive. You're taking this too seriously. You have such a wild imagination. Like all those things were told to me over and over and over again. You're paranoid. If I had hunches about something and I would say like, no, I know that this is to be true. Or I know so-and-so, don't go on a date with this person. Or I know, don't go to this place. And I would be told like, oh, Marcy, you know, you're too paranoid. And I believed it. I thought to myself over time, I said, you know what, maybe that's true. I work at the time I was working in conflict. I was studying conflict. My whole life has been centered for so long on violence because I wanted to understand the deepest, darkest depths of people. And how does it happen that these beautiful beings of light come into this world and then create something so horrific?
Yeah.
And my experience of that, then I started telling myself, well, maybe it's true. Maybe it's true because I'm so much in this difficult content. I'm traveling to places across the world in my previous work in international development where I'm experiencing difficult things. Maybe that's true. But it wasn't until that single workshop that started then waking me up to something different. And I said, well, I'm just very curious now. Maybe I'm just going to, I, on my own accord, was like, maybe I'm, instead of turning off what's coming into my meditation, I'm just going to start being curious about it. And in my own process, I started following the images. I started getting curious about them. I started paying attention to how often I had information coming in, images, feelings, senses. I started noticing that when I was feeling a lot of big emotions, that I was actually metabolizing the person's emotions sitting across from me. And I had no idea for so long. So what you were saying about anxiety, like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's so true. I didn't realize that. Why was I having such a hard time in my marriage, my first marriage? Because not only was I experiencing traumatic experiences, but I was processing, I was metabolizing his pain without even knowing it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is like, no one had taught me these things. So as I started kind of recognizing it more in myself and started naming things, mm-hmm. it got stronger. And that's mm-hmm. my experience, is when you actually have a context for it and you go, oh, this image is not by mistake. This is a message.
Right.
Oh, this feeling is like, let me check in. Is this feeling actually my own? And you see the person sitting across from you. I mean, that happened to me so many times where with my current partner, you know, early in our journey together, I would have these moments where he would be talking about something difficult that had happened to him. And I would start crying. I'm like, why am I crying? I'm crying for him.
Right.
Crying for him.
I think this is one of the reasons why I personally feel it's our responsibility when we tap in and open to, I don't think we're special, meaning like this is unique. I think many of us are able to have this. I just think, again, it's kind of layered, and is it going to appear in this lifetime and in this version of your soul? And is it open? All of the layers of it.
Yes.
But I think once you do make those connections and awake, like you're awake to it. It's not like I could turn it off now. Could you turn yours off if you decided you don't want to do this anymore? Right. You can't, it's literally, you can't turn back. So moving forward.
And also, but just to say, like, I can't imagine my life without it now.
Oh gosh, no way. It would be like, no thanks. Like it's so fun and interesting and evolving. But the point is that I also take the responsibility of my own skill management, mm-hmm. like my energy management, my practices, the boundaries, like that all I take very, very seriously, because we all know healers who are burnt out or like empathic and taking on everybody's feelings and emotions and then running around, in my experience, whether it's the PTA or the neighborhood or overachieving in all these other ways. So like I try to hone that energy daily in the rhythms and rituals, which honestly, Ayurveda, having it as my foundation of well-being and lifestyle, just provides that naturally. Just naturally is setting the stage every day so that I can have a connection to the energy at that level and be able to hone it and work with it and not just take everybody else's stuff on and then leave it stuck in my body, right? If Ayurveda is the digestion of emotions, sometimes they're mine, sometimes they're other people's, but listening to intuitive guidance for, oh, I need to go to a Reiki healer today or a massage therapist, or I need to take a really salty bath or something to move through these emotions, because this is actually how my masculine like plays out so strongly, is like, it wants to know whose emotions and what's the problem and like, how can I solve it? Like, whose stomach ache is this? Who had trauma that I met today that I took on, you know, like it tries to like check. And I'm like, hey, y'all don't need to know, just do the work. You don't have to identify, right? Like, it's so funny how our old habits like still come in. I'm like, let me just make a checklist of whose emotions I've taken on today. No. So what does this actually look like in your life? I just gave some examples of like how I have to work with and I want to, not have to. It's like, this is the joy of my life. Mm-hmm. How did your life change and shift? Like, what are the tangible things that had to evolve and change and shift? And then what do you do now in your daily life to stay connected to source?
Mm-hmm. My life had to change a lot.
Yeah.
But my life hadn't changed a lot because of it, what we were talking about before, that I got to a place where intuition was speaking so loud to me that it was just like, I was getting sick because I was out of alignment. So that meant I left a marriage, that meant I left a job, that meant that I stepped out on my own, that meant that I took 3 months away from everything and everyone. And I drove to a monastery and almost became a Buddhist nun. I had this whole process that I had to kind of really shift everything. And so it was pretty dramatic for me once I started really listening to this, to be honest. And that's just my experience. And how it looks for me today is, every morning, my morning is sacred. Nobody can touch it. My early morning time, I wake up and I meditate, and that has to be the first thing that I do in the morning to recalibrate myself. Mm-hmm. I go through a series of practices that are meant to ground down, cleanse out, and then reconnect up my energy. Mm-hmm. So that I am aligned right away. I am both tapping in for messages. And so, I mean, for me, this work is both, it's a parallel. I am both tapping into messages of spirit, which sometimes can come from my guides, which sometimes can come from my loved ones who have passed. And I'm both tapping into that and the human experience at the same time. I don't see them. You have to keep tapping into both in order to be a fully integrated whole person.
Yeah.
And that's to me where a lot of healers make the mistakes, is if you open up without tending to your own healing, mm-hmm. then you don't integrate fully. And it can be extremely ungrounding because you open up and then you open up so much, like you're saying, that then you're carrying around all these people's emotions. Mm-hmm. So I also am very big with boundaries. So the morning, nobody can touch. There's certain times I only take clients on certain days. Mm-hmm. My client hours are very strict. I'm not flexible with those. Yeah. I have personal practice time where I'm kind of reading, you know, on a daily basis. And the biggest thing for me is journaling, because that's mm-hmm. the human side of me. I need to really attend constantly the human side of me. Like, what am I feeling? What's coming up for me right now? What do I need to know? What do I need to nurture and care for? And in that process, then as I keep tending to that, my experience is then spirit keeps connecting me at deeper levels mm-hmm. up. It's like the more I keep connecting down into myself, the more I keep connecting up. And it's not the opposite. It's not the other way around for me. And I think sometimes what happens is people keep connecting up, up, up into other, you know, spirit realms, lifetimes, etc. And if you do that without the connecting down, it just can really take you out. I think it can really take you out. So for me,
embodiment.
Yeah. Yeah, because boundaries are like, so, you know, I have psychic protection practices I do that are at a psychic level mm-hmm. that I do that are boundaries. And then in my real life, I practice boundaries. So if I'm right. off, my phone is on airplane mode.
Right.
If I say no, I mean no. I don't waver on the no. If I mean yes, I say yes. I don't waver on the yes. Like I have to kind of be much in integrity. And that's just like an agreement that I have with my soul. And I don't know how to do it any other way. And that's also how I teach other people, that we have to have this agreement at all levels. We have to both address the boundaries in your everyday life with the people that you live with the people that you're interacting with, and with yourself, right? Also, there's an internal boundary of my inner critic. I have to have a good boundary with that. I can't be allowing my inner critic, which is, you know, can be a very toxic personality, to like run all over my system and stomp all over things. I have to have good internal boundaries. So for me, it's multi-level. I have to have a good inner boundary with myself and mindful of that. I have to be mindful of the boundaries with the people that are immediately around me, mindful of the boundaries with my clients, mindful of then also the spiritual boundaries. I'm very clear about what I'm available for on a spiritual level and what I'm not. Very clear.
How did people in your life, in your inner circle, respond to the strengthening of the boundaries? This comes up a lot in...
It's been a multi-year process. So my people, like the people in my life, are used to it now because it's been several years since I made this change. But at the beginning, it was challenging. There were certain family members that were used to me being available all the time. Friends that were used to me. I mean, I used to joke that I mean, how I got into the work I do now is I was the red phone for everybody. You know, I was the one that people called at 3 a.m. when they were going through divorce. I was the one that people pulled aside at work and, you know, set up like a conference room. And then all of a sudden I was like doing sessions with people in conference rooms in my lunch and then after work and at the early hours of the morning. And so I slowly over time, like I didn't have a choice because I have a chronic illness. I have Lyme. And so if I don't respect my boundaries, my Lyme gets really bad, really bad. It's like, you know, I have this amazing illness inside of me that's taught me about boundaries.
Yeah. Right.
And so at the beginning, it was really hard and I had to be okay with people not getting it. I had to be okay with people, being upset. And I had to recognize over time that the people that really loved me and cared for me will respect my boundaries. So often many of us, especially those of us who've been socialized as women, have been taught that we have to say no and then like a long explanation. I mean, God, that was like that was my go-to forever. Like no, and then here's why, and and I have to explain it, I have to make it okay for the person, and I have to make sure that they're okay with it. And I had to get to a point finally where I had to say, like, you know what, if I say no and the person's upset with my no, then that's not like with lots of love and compassion, I love them, but that's like their thing. That's their thing. They have to be okay with that no. And if they can't respect my no, then honestly, over time, if people can't respect your no's, they're not really respecting you. And I have to practice in the same thing. When my friends say no, or people I say no to me, then I do the same thing as much as possible to honor that no.
So what do you think, someone's listening to this, they're like, that's awesome for Marcy and Pleasance. This does not relate to my life. I work in the government. I'm a lawyer. I've got multiple kids. Like I'm in it so deep. What is like one or two things that you would say they could do to start connecting with their own source or intuition or guidance system, today?
I like to talk about micro self-care. So micro self-care is like 30-second increments where you just check in with yourself. Everybody has 30 seconds. I'm not even talking about 5 minutes. I'm talking about 30 seconds. 30 seconds to a minute where throughout the day, you just, like, you have to start with a grounding of first just being more connected with yourself before we kind of start talking about opening up to, you know, like intuition in a deeper way. First, it has to start with this deeper connection with ourselves. And the way we can start doing that is just incrementally throughout the day for 30 seconds or a minute, just pause, just be with your breath. Or, you know, I have a tree outside in front of my office. Look outside and look at the tree. Notice the leaves, notice the color, what's happening here. My favorite question is to just check in with yourself and ask yourself in that moment, how am I feeling? It feels like a very simple question. It is very profound. Literally, if nobody did anything else other than just continually asking themselves, like, how am I feeling? What am I really feeling? Let me be curious about what this is about. Like, that question can take someone so far. Because you're just coming back into the ground of your experience. So if in a moment, you know, you're in the moment and you have like, you know, you have multiple kids and you're trying to get the kids ready for breakfast and stuff, and you're in the middle of doing that and you're putting the cereal in the bowls, like in that moment, just pause while you're putting the cereal in the bowls, take 3 breaths, continue. Just that tiny pause is just breaking the dynamic of disconnection. And the more we slowly break the, like, peel off the dynamic of disconnection and we start slowly plugging back in, the more we'll be able to hear those intuitive nudges. But most of all, my experience is we all hear them. The problem is we just don't trust them. And the reason why we don't trust them is because we're not inside of ourselves. Yeah. We're not inside of ourselves. So I would just simply start by just pausing and breathing, pausing and asking how do I feel right now?
Yeah.
Pausing and noticing the colors around you. And then from there, if that feels like that's supportive, you start to feel a shift, then you can start integrating other things like just 5 minutes of journaling or something, just journal your feelings, or 5 minutes of being with your breath, or 5 minutes of noticing how you're feeling. It doesn't have to be extensive practices. I have to have an extensive practice because I hold space for people.
Yeah.
And I teach people intuition every single week. Yeah. And so I have to be impeccable with that psychic space for myself. If that was not my purpose in life, then my relationship to my practice might be different.
Well, and I would also say that you're making an active choice and priority to have integrity, which I deeply appreciate, because there's a lot of practitioners who don't have a lot of integration, which is integrity. So they with the boundaries and holding it because the trust is not there. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of scarcity and chasing. And when that shifts over to the abundant state of flow, meaning like, this is what I'm doing, this is who I am, this is where it's coming from, and that replenishing is that sense of abundance, and you're not chasing. It's just a really different way of running your business and your life and your career, especially when I think for both of us, there's no other way to work in the world at this point. Like, it's, I don't really think of it as like my business as its own thing and my life as its own thing. They're all the same. It's all this sacred experience of just wow, every moment. At this point, it just blows my mind. And I think that what you were talking about with inner critics stomping all over the place and really having a larger presence in your life, again, is a choice and a priority that I think a lot of people don't even realize they're making because it's all happening inside.
Yes.
And so having these like really, really beautiful, honest conversations about what that really looks like, because over the past year, I've been doing this like super feel silly, but really sacred practice of holding myself at night, giving myself a hug at night and saying, I love you. When I'm sleeping, I'm on my side. I go to bed, I curl up and I hug and hold myself and say, I love you so much. Thank you so much for a beautiful day. I cherish you. Like, I started holding myself the way that I think I wish I had been held as a kiddo. And I love my parents. This is not a show about parents and childhood trauma, so I'm not going to talk about that. However, Ayurveda has taught me about mothering yourself. So I start the day with like, how can I nourish myself today? How can I take care of myself today? So part of ending the day is this holding. And what I have realized is like doing that for a year, I have like this really beautiful, intimate relationship with myself that has slowly over time taken a really top priority, a top rank in my life, which has made all the difference for the trust. And it's the micro self-care that you're talking about, because if someone were to say, Pleasance, how on earth do you have this abundance and trust and self-trust and empower, you know, embodiment? And I'm like, okay, so here's what you do. Hold yourself at night in a hug for a year and say, I love you and I care for you, and like mean it and say it in your kindest voice. Like, that's what I say. It sounds so silly, but it's so sacred, and it's made such a difference between letting inner critic voice run the show or inner mentor and inner sort of nourisher mama bear. Like, I would never, you know, I would exactly the way I care for my children, I'm caring for myself.
Yes.
And a lot of the time, not all the time, especially not sort of like midday if there's a million things happening, but just having that sacredness at the end of the day. I don't know. It's one of those micro self-cares that's really made a big difference.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think those kind of experiences where we ritualize, I'm a big ritualizer.
Yeah, yeah.
When we ritualize something is very big because that's my parrot. When we ritualize something like that, we're taking something that we're consciously choosing and we're enrolling the unconscious part of ourselves in that. And it's so powerful. So I love that. You know, I do things like bubble baths for like my little kid inside of me all the time. She loves bubble baths. So like baths are like my thing. Yeah. When she needs something, I do bath. But if I can't, you know, I think ending your day in a mindful way, like, does make a huge difference.
Yeah.
My partner and I have a practice, and when he's not here, I do it myself, which is we do something called the joy jar, and we go throughout the day and we label and like name what are some joyful moments throughout the day that we can like collect and kind of put into a virtual jar for ourselves in a sense before we sleep. And that has been a really nice integrator for me. And I think, you know, it is just these small moments and patience. I mean, patience, patience, patience. I've been on my own spiritual journey in my healing path now for 12 years. It's a long time. It's a lot of hours. And I'm not saying that everyone has to invest that, but it's to say that people who are, it takes time. It takes time. Yeah. And it's like every tiny incremental step is important and worth of knowing and acknowledging. And it's a cyclical process. You know, like I mentioned, briefly before we hopped on, and I talked a little bit about it in my blog this week, that, you know, I'm just amazed that every single, as I keep essentially mothering myself, as I keep like showing up for myself, loving myself, being kind, forgiving myself, even forgiving myself, you know, I have intuitive hunches all the time. And then I end up like talking myself out of it and not following it. That's okay. Mm-hmm. As I have that compassion for that, then, in that process, I create more space for myself to, keep showing up. And so again, it's like dropping the idea of needing to arrive. I'm a healer because I'm in my healing all the time. And that's for me, I think, really important, is recognizing, like, as you're starting to, you know, as your listeners are trying to create their reconnection to themselves, these mini micro moments over time, they may not, you know, in a month feel dramatically different, but suddenly, you know, a year from now, like you were saying, like a year, you look back and you go, wow, I've really shifted. Yeah. You know, I made a mistake. And this time, instead of beating myself up about it, I was like, okay. And I let it go. And it's sometimes it's so subtle like that, but that subtlety is so huge that it's important to acknowledge.
Yeah, I think that this is something I've been really open about this year, is that, so I'm probably, you know, 20 years in, because I really started practicing when I was 20, is when I got introduced to yoga and started moving beyond therapy, is usually what I say, because I was in therapy for my whole life, and it was fine-ish. I don't know, that's, again, a whole other topic. but I really did not start to heal until I was introduced to yoga.
Yeah.
So, and that was at 20. So, I am 20 years in, I turned 40 this year, and this year has been the most powerful shifts and changes and synchronicities and truths and unfoldings and freaking healing and crying and feeling like, and so when people in our communities are like, oh, well, one day I'll get there, it's that same thing. I'm like, I don't know where you're going to get. I don't know what's going to happen, because this year alone, I'm like, what is going to happen next year? I can't even begin to imagine. And that's what that sort of basic Esther Hicks, you know, law of attraction is, like, alignment is like being totally present and grateful and appreciative, not grateful, but appreciative for what is, and that sense of eagerness for more, right? Mm-hmm. That is alignment. And so that's why I'm like, all right, 41, bring it, you know? Because if you had told me a year ago, like, I wouldn't be drinking, I would have decided to become sober. I mean, there's no way. I would have been like, that's my identity. That's what I do to relax. Like, there's no way I would have believed you. You know, I would have been so fighting it. And so when that divine intervention and positive intervention and that hit came in and just surrendering, I was like, okay. So now that I've had another level of that practice, which is what you're talking about, like listening to it and then trusting it and trying it and experimenting and being curious. Now the next one that comes next time, I'm like, let's do it. Mm-hmm. I know this leads to just kind of digging and healing. And that's the process of a lifetime. And in my very humble opinion, like a well-lived life.
Yes. Yes.
You know, because it's just always, I'm always learning or expanding from it. So Marcy, where can people who want to read your blogs and be in your learnings and your teachings, where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, they can find me on the internet at marcimoberg.com, marcimoberg.com. Okay. And if they sign up for my newsletter there, they'll have all the updates. I lead intuition development courses. And the way that I lead my courses is completely intuition led. So, you know, people ask me this year, like, oh, are you going to offer your intuition a course again in 2019? I don't know.
Yeah.
Depends on what intuition tells me.
Yeah.
So I'm always following that based on my writing. So whatever I'm sharing in my writing and whatever I'm sharing in my teachings is always really based on what spirit is inspiring me to do.
Yeah.
And it's always never what I think.
Girl, I understand. Do you have any teachers that you recommend now, podcasts or books or anyone who from that divine feminine who's really blown your mind or who you're like, oh man, you gotta listen to or know?
I really, this beautiful woman, Lisa Lister, impacted me a lot over the last couple of years. She's really honestly the main one that's actually had the greatest impact me, I'd say, over the last couple of years because of her, I started tracking my cycle over time. And that was big for me. And because of her, I started tracking the moon. And because of her, I started tracking astrological experiences. And so if I were to name one person, it would be her. I also really love, I think she's in the process of changing her podcast, but Wild Soul Tarot. She's an amazing healer that talks about trauma and tarot and how she is a healer, a very profound healer, but she also is still in PTSD experiences. And I just love that she's like not putting a glossy, you know, so shellac over things and pretending like things are different. And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I just respect a lot of people who are very transparent about their process, because if somebody, if somebody is a healer, looks like really like they have everything put together, there's more there.
Yeah, they hired a good branding or spent too much on their own branding. I don't know. Everybody who is in Thrive or Lola or Thrive Squared, I would just like you to listen to what Marcy just said about tracking the moons, tracking your own cycle, and tracking astrology, because we teach that in those courses. And sometimes people are like, can you give me the evidence? You know, what's the evidence? What's the research around tracking moon? And I'm just like, just try it. Just go have an experiment with tracking your cycle and tracking the moons and tracking astrology, and then come back and tell me. Like, don't do the head down first. Do the feeling. See what happens. Sometimes we don't need to know the why.
I will give your listeners one little piece of tag around that, which is that my experience with my menstrual cycle was intense. I have two wombs in my body, which meant I had two cycles all the time, which meant that for most of my life, I was bleeding without stop, to be honest. And so what I would say is that for me, by starting to really track my cycle, and I live by it, I run my business by it, I work by it, and the moon cycles, those practices alone, and then layering on the astrology pieces, have healed so much of my physical symptoms in my own body. It's very profound. And honestly, I believe that those cycles, tracking those, has developed a different level of trust, a different level of love, a different level of acceptance of myself that I didn't have before. And through that process, cracked me open to my current healing work in my own personal process, which is the hardest thing I have ever done. And I don't believe I would have opened up to that level of the basement of my being without tracking those cycles, because it brought me into a different level of synchronicity with myself and with the universe.
Yeah. I talk about this all the time in my own experience with it is how I talk about harmony. It is what created the container for the harmony to be really integrated in a whole different way with nature and the wisdom of the earth and Mother Nature. And again, I don't have a lot of tangible language around it. Like I can't really tell you what it's going to happen for you.
Yes.
I have no idea. Because all I could say is, and I wrote about this, like I moved my bleeding from full moon to new moon just because I'd always bled on the full moon and most healers do. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, I want to be normal. Put me on the new moon, please. And I did for like 6 months. And I was like, and then slowly it started as the closer I got to 40, started moving back to the full moon. And one of my like people on my team, you know, my healer team was like, girl, you can't avoid, like, you can pretend to play with it, move it around, but it's always going to come back to that full moon. I'm like, oh man, but it's so fun to have that. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen for other people. Okay. To close, I want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for doing your work. Thank you for being a model of authenticity and integration of divine feminine in this world and sharing your story and really being open to the challenges and still moving through them, right? And being open about that and not pretending to have things tied up in a bow because that does not really serve other people.
No.
So I honor you. I'm grateful for you and our connection. And I can't wait to talk more about Wow Wow in the future.
Me too. Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
I'll put the link to your website so everyone just click on the notes and you'll find it there. Thanks, Marcy.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.